Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, reacting to a 45-26 win yesterday for the Tennessee Titans against the Indianapolis Colts. The Titans move to 8-3 on the season and claim sole possession of first place in the AFC South. And Ryan Porth, you were very, I guess, hesitant against the, what's the right word for his mood the first week against the Colts?
I think he was
dread.
Yeah, I think he was flat out dreading the game.
I think he was too. You didn't get that vibe from you last week. Did you see this coming against the Colts?
Yes.
You feel better?
Yes, I did. I felt pretty optimistic, especially as the week went along. Felt very optimistic after the news came out Wednesday afternoon when Joe and I were filling in for Jared and the GM that DeForest Buckner was going on the COVID list,
right,
and that it seemed likely that he was going to miss the game. And also, I have to say, the way they won in Baltimore and the fact that they weren't playing Jacksonville or Detroit coming up in the next game, that they were facing the Colts in their biggest game, I had this feeling that it was going to carry over into the Colts game.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, what changed? Because it's just the Colts. There's like an aura that goes with that. What changed heading into this game? But it was the Baltimore game that turned it around for you.
I think so. I think it was the fourth quarter and overtime of the Baltimore game that gave me confidence that this team, the fact that they found a way against the Ravens, against almost all odds with the state of their roster and the injuries at that point. And also, Mike Vrabel's teams in the last few years continued to get better and build character wins in the second half of the season. So I just felt like this was time for the Titans to go up to Indy in a huge game, even though the Colts were missing some people. The Titans were missing some people too. So I don't want to hear from Colts fans that, oh, you know, you guys benefited from us missing out on Buckner and Taylor and blah, 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 blah. Don't want to hear it. They can stick it. Titans going to win the division now after yesterday's win. But I felt pretty good after the Baltimore game and feel really good now about their chances of making some noise here down the stretch.
Did you just call a shot there? You just said the Titans are going to win the division. Is that a called shot?
Is it over? It is.
Yeah, I've called that twice now on the show this morning.
Okay,
I won't say it's over, but I feel pretty good about it.
So if the Titans and Colts meet again in the playoffs, which could happen.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
how are you feeling about that one?
It is way too early to tell what my mood is going to be that week.
That's fair.
Yeah, what if it's – I think right now, wouldn't it be? It would be the 3-6. I think it'd be the 3-6 game here in Nashville.
Yeah.
And that's the problem is the Titans
that's not the place you wanted
won 3 of 4 up there. When's the last time they beat them here? What year?
God,
you
2017.
Know. Oh, that's right. They did have the 2017.
Taylor game.
They got one of the last many here.
Right.
Yeah. That was the Jacoby Brissett. Yeah.
The only Taywan Taylor game.
Yeah. He had a big game against the Eagles.
Yeah.
In that overtime win.
He did. Oh, goodness.
Okay.
So Porth has called a shot, says the Titans are going to win the division. And we had Jeff Saturday on, former Colts center last week, and you asked him, is the winner of this game on Sunday going to win the division? And Jeff Saturday said yes. So now that the Titans have won, they're 8-3, first place in the AFC South, is this now their division? Do you think that they wrapped it up yesterday? Obviously not technically. But do you think yesterday's win propels them to winning the AFC South?
Well, I think they should win the AFC South, and I think they're strong favorites to win the AFC South. But, I mean, if you tell me the Browns are going to come in here and get all over Tannehill and, you know, win a close game because the Browns are actually really good, the Browns can run the heck out of the football.
Number one team in the league.
I mean, they can run the heck out of the football. With, you know, it's awfully nice to have Kareem Hunt as your backup, and Nick Chubb is – you know, we've been talking about Derrick Henry this show, and I mentioned Dalvin Cook and McCaffrey and Kamara. I mean, Nick Chubb might be the second-best runner of the football after Derrick Henry. So you're going to tell me that they lose that game? I'm not sitting here with a shocked face. I do think that the schedule favors the Titans from here a little bit, especially because the Colts have to deal with Deshaun Watson twice. But it's not – I mean, I agree with Corey Curtis earlier. Who – 2 weeks ago, I was like, well, after the Titans win at Baltimore and Indy, then we'll see where things go. No one had that. And so no one has what may come ahead in the next few weeks in the NFL. It's just a question whether the Titans can avoid some of these potholes or not. You don't lose to the Jags. You don't lose to the Lions. You don't lose to the Texans. You get that done, and you're at 11. If you win this week, then I might be willing next week to say, oh, it's about over. Because the Colts also have, of course, the Raiders and the Steelers.
Although the Raiders a little less intimidating
well,
after yesterday.
That's true. My goodness. Maybe it's Vic Beasley being on their team. It's kind of like Antonio Brown, the karma with the Bucks. How's that worked out for you, Bucks?
Not going great so far.
And, maybe Vic Beasley being in the locker room is hurting the Raiders. I don't know. What the heck happened there?
I don't know. That's a good question. 43-6 for the Falcons against the Raiders yesterday without Julio Jones. Pretty impressive by Atlanta. Let's revisit our poll question of the day at 1025 The Game on Twitter. Following yesterday's big win at Indy, plus the comeback last week against Baltimore, how do you view what this Titans team's ceiling is? And the options are you still won't win the division, AFC South champs, AFC title contenders, and they are going to the Super Bowl. Right now, AFC title contenders winning the poll, 42% of the vote, 34% saying AFC South champs, 19% saying Super Bowl, and just 5% saying they still won't win the division. Joe, your reaction?
It's gotten even sunshinier from earlier.
It has. It started out with the AFC South champs leading the poll, and now we've switched to AFC title contenders.
That's just not
enough. I guess you could technically be both.
Well, you can. But, you know, it's just not enough to win the AFC South right now. Focus on that. That would be good. That'd be the first time since 2008. But look, are they AFC title contenders? I mean, as much as anyone else outside of Kansas City, I think they are. I think they're right there with the Steelers if they play like this. And I don't know who else. I mean, you can look at Buffalo. You know, Buffalo's a good team. It's a good conference. There's a lot of good teams. I think the Titans yesterday looked like a team that is right there with Pittsburgh as someone who could challenge the Chiefs. The Chiefs at their best are going to win the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Like if the Chiefs play their best, they're going to win the Super Bowl.
I think that's fair.
Right?
I mean, their best is a pretty high level.
Yeah, it's just
we saw Mahomes and Hill at their best yesterday. Pretty good.
I mean,
he had 270 yards receiving.
Yeah.
200 in the first quarter.
203 in the first quarter. You know, really that game should have been a blowout to the detriment of the Chiefs, to their discredit. They let the Bucs back in that game, but like when in the first half, it was like watching teams in two different leagues play each other.
Right.
So the idea is, can you get yourself that shot at them again? And it's amazing we're talking about that right now, 2 weeks after wondering if the Titans are making the playoffs, but that's the NFL.
But we've talked all season long about how important it is to win the division this year. And, you know, people in Indy are making a big deal. They haven't won the division since 2014. It's been since 08 for the Titans. And getting a home playoff game, albeit not going to mean the same thing this year as it normally does, winning a division, getting a home playoff game, I think is important for this group. And it's kind of that next step. You know, obviously the trip to the AFC title game last year was great, and you'll take another trip to the AFC title game this year for sure. But getting that home playoff game and establishing some dominance in this AFC South, which has been missing for a long time, it's important for this group. And now you have a great opportunity to finish that job after the win yesterday, 8-3 on the season.
Yeah, it is. It would be a big achievement on its own. And you're right, it's not the same as having a full stadium. But even if you can play a playoff game in front of 15,000 people, that has made a difference out there this year. I mean, it's not nothing, you know, and it's an achievement in its own.
It is. And look, I mean, this is something that you've worked for. And if you're this team right now, I think you're starting to feel confident again. I think that was the biggest thing the Baltimore game showed me, is I was worried about where their confidence level was. They'd lost 3 out of 4 heading into that game and then played offensively not very well in the first half of that game. To switch it around, come back, win that game, and then just look dominant from the jump yesterday. This team's confidence, even without Taylor Lewan and the injuries that they've had, which are piling up, we know that, we've talked about that. This team, I feel like, has got to be in a great spot right now from a confidence perspective as they head out the rest of the season here with 5 games left. And hopefully, you get Adam Humphries back this week against Cleveland maybe. At some point, hopefully, Adoree Jackson back, like we've talked about all season long. Then your confidence has a chance to grow from there. But offensively, we always knew if this team was going to go anywhere, that was going to have to be the piece that carried them. I had my doubts after Lewan went down, based on the sample size that we saw, that was going to happen again. And now the last 6 quarters, basically, they look, I'm not going to say every bit as explosive as they did earlier this season, but certainly look explosive enough to really hang a number on some of these teams heading down the stretch.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Lawan is, obviously, the thing that separates him is he's an elite pass protector. That's why he's a left tackle. That's why he got paid so much. But in terms of run blocking, that offensive line looks pretty good. You know, they've outscored the Ravens and Colts, I think 65-26, if I'm not mistaken, over the past, game and a half. That's saying something. Now, just imagine if Joe's Clowney comes back on the field, what this team could do, you know? Can you imagine Joe's Clowney? That's got to – I think we should just call him that from now on.
But has Clowney been addition by subtraction to that defense, Joe?
I don't think so. I'm trying to think of who – I mean, Landry has been playing his guts out. You know, I didn't notice a lot of Derek Roberson. I mean, I don't think – it's not like someone has come in there. We notice that spot when it's him and they're not doing anything because it's Clowney and he's getting paid so much money. I'll point you to the first half against Indianapolis and say how many guys were as disruptive as him. And two huge stops they got were because he blew up his guy.
Look, I hear
that's
you.
Not enough. It's not $13 million worth of – it's not enough at all.
I hear you.
But, no, it's not addition by subtraction.
I hear you. But what would you say the best three games of the year for the Titans have been? I would say Chicago. I would say Baltimore. And I would say this game.
You talking about defensively?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do those three games have in common?
That Joe's Clowney wasn't on the field?
Is that coincidence? Probably. But
yeah.
Three games, if it starts to get to 4-5 and they're better defensively without him – I mean,
hey, I know some people who are going to say it. I know people will point to it and say, I mean, I know one in particular who's going to tee off on that. But, yeah, he has not been very good. They would gladly take him back for the stretch run, and he'd play a whole bunch of snaps if they had him, you know. And he will never make what he got is getting paid this year, and somehow someone will probably pay him a lot next year, and it won't be worth it. We've seen that. But I'll stick by my guns. You would still rather have him than not.
When we come back, what did we make of the day yesterday from Arthur Smith? And also, did Mike Vrabel take a shot at our own Joe Rexroad yesterday after the game? We'll discuss that.
Yes, he did.
We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rexroad. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans fans, Corner Pub is the place to check out the game with locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, or downtown and great beer specials, including $1 off of Yazoo and Happen Harry's draft beers, plus Happen Harry's bucket specials. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from the Corner Pub downtown this Sunday. Join ESPN 102.5 The Game from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. prior to the Titans taking on the Cleveland Browns at Nissan Stadium. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, and is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by Rumble On, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Kubota Tractors. Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers and Corner Pub locations will be following social distancing and safety guidelines. So make sure you join us for that. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Joe, we've talked a lot about the offense. 45 points put up yesterday by the Titans, including a special teams touchdown by A.J. Brown. But I thought Arthur Smith largely had just a great day yesterday. Now, I did think there was a drive in the first half that the Titans ended up scoring a touchdown on. It was one of Derrick Henry's touchdowns that he ended up overthinking himself a little bit too much. Like, Derrick Henry was getting 7 yards a pop. Every time they turned around to hand the ball off to him, he was getting 6 yards, 10 yards, 8 yards. And they went to a situation where they started the play-action pass, and they dropped back and threw the ball through a couple of incompletions. And I was sitting there just being like, dude, what are you doing? Don't overthink this. Just run the ball. Now, obviously, it worked out. The Titans scored a touchdown. Really, other than that, Joe, I thought Arthur Smith was pretty much perfect yesterday in the play calling that he had. Pretty outstanding.
Yeah, and again, you know, three straight games. The first drive is just like, it's like you are just controlling a very good defense, score a touchdown. I thought he had another great day. I tweeted something. I don't remember when it was. Probably sometime during the game. I'm like, I wonder if Detroit Lions affiliates are watching the Tennessee offense right now, because, of course, the Lions have a head coaching vacancy. He's going to be a commodity. Not the only one, but he's going to be someone who at least gets interviews for head coaching jobs this offseason. He's done – I mean, look, he's done big picture 2 years as OC. I think he's way exceeded anyone's reasonable expectations. He's got really good players. I mean, I agree with Vrabel, it's a players league first, but the way he deploys them and finds matchups and is creative and keeps defenses off balance is pretty darn special.
And then Vrabel, I thought, another good day for him yesterday. And the fourth down decision to go for it in the first half. We've talked about it a couple of times here on the show. You're up 28-14 in the game. You're about to punt. You call the timeout, bring the offense back on the field. Ryan Tannehill converts to Corey Davis, and that leads to the touchdown before the half to go up 35-14. That was a critical part of the game, and I think really where, if you're a Titans fan, you felt very comfortable heading into the second half, having a 21-point lead. The swing there was pretty great for the Titans.
Yeah, that was the kill shot, and I get being careful there, the initial decision to punt. You know, it would have been a long 55-yarder for Gostkowski. You, if you either miss that or you don't convert, they are now in position to get a field goal, even with no timeouts, and then they're going to get the ball to start the second half, and so they have a chance to double up and make this a very different-looking game. But I thought the decision to go was a perfectly timed piece of aggression. I think it ended the game.
And Mike Vrabel was asked about that decision after the game, why he chose to go for it on fourth down before the end of the half. Here's what Titans head coach Mike Vrabel had to say.
Mike, talk about the decision to go for it there on the fourth and four after you sent the punt team out and then called timeout and sent the offense back out. What caused you to change your mind on that and just the play that Ryan and Corey were able to make?
I felt like it was an opportunity to continue the drive. They didn't have any timeouts. I thought the way that our defense was playing and also just the confidence that I have in our offense, and just wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page. The protection, you mentioned Ryan and Corey, but, you know, he was able to progress through and we kept a clean pocket. We complete a lot of passes when there's a clean pocket. And again, Corey's, you know, continuing to build confidence and playing well, and I'm happy for him.
And a great catch by Corey Davis on that play from Ryan Tannehill, a perfectly delivered ball. When you factor in Charles Davis on the broadcast was talking about Tannehill threw it low on purpose to avoid Corey Davis from getting his head taken off. Corey Davis makes the catch about 4 inches off the ground. It was a great play, and that was, like you said, I think really the death blow for the Colts in that game.
It was, and teams do this a lot, and I like this, and what I saw in that was the Titans looked like they were just hard counting,
yep.
Right? I mean, we see this a lot in the NFL. It used to be it's just what it is. And then at some point, I'd love to know where this started, someone decided, let's make it look like we're hard counting and then actually get the snap off late.
So it's like the fake spike.
Exactly. So the Titans kind of, you know, Tannehill doing a lot of the histrionics, doing the hard counting, and then they get to about 6 on the clock, he actually gets the snap. Now, I don't know if that has any impact on the Colts, but I'm fascinated by that particular approach and whether it really does anything to a defense. I even asked Vaccaro about that yesterday. And he said, you know, I don't know if that messed them up or not. But, yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that you kind of can get lulled to sleep on.
And it was a fascinating decision by Mike Vrabel. Also, some fascinating remarks in the post game, maybe calling out our own Joe Rexroad. Here's what Mike Vrabel had to say about the plan on fourth down after the game.
Yeah, Mike, back on that fourth and four decision, initially, were you going to do something different? And how effective are those plays where you're kind of – maybe making it look like you're just trying to draw them and then you snap late in the clock? How much, you know, work does it take to do that exactly right? How much does that maybe mess up a defense if you do it well?
Well, we had had a double reverse call with Brett, but I figured that with this coming back from the IR and the wrist that we probably shouldn't do it. So Stretch told me to call a timeout and then just throw it to Corey.
So I think a lot of Titans fans heard that comment from Mike Vrabel talking about a double reverse to Brett Kern. I was like, what's he talking about?
Huh?
What is he talking about, Joe?
Oh, man. Oh, Vrabel. I jumped in there and I was like, gotcha, which has become like the kind of joking Zoom thing, which is a John Glennon response. Yeah. Like basically when Vrabel doesn't give him an answer, he's like, gotcha. And my next question.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is absolutely
that was a great Glennon impression, by the way.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you. Well, Glennon texted me when he said the double reverse and he was like, what? And I was like, dude, he's ripping me. I've written about double reverse. You and I have joked how many times about Brett Kern
several times
doing the double reverse.
Yes.
Which goes back to last year, Tampa Bay. They had a fake field goal, and they ran Kern, and Devin White nearly ended his life.
He almost killed him.
He also forced a fumble that they didn't call a fumble, and it actually should have been a fumble and a touchdown, but the ref screwed it up. And so, I mean, look, I ripped Vrabel that day. I don't think I was alone in that. There was a lot of calls last year that were very questionable. And this was – Vrabel has been holding on and waiting for
a
chance to strike back, and I love it. I love it so much because he can say, play better, coach better. And, you know, he can, like, say, I respect Coach Harbaugh, blah, blah, blah. But we see when he's like, go coach your game, Harbaugh. And we see when he takes these little shots, and I'm glad to be the recipient, he is not Bill Belichick. He is our human being in Nashville. And I just – it's awesome.
It is impressive that he has held on to that for so long, that grudge.
Absolutely. Oh, and that's the thing. Sometimes, you know, you can tell, you know, when they have a really good game, he feels it a little bit. He likes to give little shots out here and there. This isn't the first time. So I love it, man.
We appreciate Mike Vrabel for listening to the show.
Yes, thank you. We've got – hey, listen, if you'd like to call in right now, Mike, if you're not busy – Or the text line, like we're here.
We could have our own form of the Zoom chat on our text line.
Do you think Heidi from Dixon is a burner for Vrabel?
Could be Vrabel.
Oh, my gosh, maybe. I've always thought Stillman, but maybe that's the Vrabel burner.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe Vrabel's got some more interesting comments today that he's able to throw Joe Rexroach's way, which, by the way, you can hear that today at 12:30 on Darren Donick and Chase. Our live press conferences on ESPN 102.5 The Game are brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. So who knows, Joe? Maybe round two today between you and Vrabel.
I hope so.
You got anything to throw back at him that you've been holding on to for a year?
I've got what? What about? I've got 3 hours to figure it out.
Okay.
I don't hold on to things, but I'm sure I can come up with something.
When we come back, we will dive back into the news over the weekend from Vanderbilt. Derek Mason let go as head coach. Where does Vanderbilt go from here? That's coming up next. But first, Joe, you've got a word from FanDuel.
I do. I have a word for anyone watching football on a weekend, seeing an ad for FanDuel Sportsbook and wondering to themselves if that's legal in Tennessee. Well, you bet it is. FanDuel Sportsbook, it's legal in Tennessee. You can place your first bet on FanDuel Sportsbook risk-free. You can get up to $1,000 back if you don't win. No strings attached. Any bet you want. If you win, you win. You keep the cash. But if you lose, you get the entire bet back up to $1,000 in bonus site credit. So you can take another shot at the end zone on the house. Coming up this week, Titans, Browns, maybe an interesting game. The Vols are back on the field. Whatever you like out there, Vols against the Gators, by the way. Whatever you like out there, you can bet on it. You can get it back. It's risk-free. And that's just the beginning with FanDuel Sportsbook. They have a simple app. They got live betting on every game. They've got game parlays. You can combine multiple bets from one game into a single parlay, and then you get your winnings in as little as 24 hours. Fast withdrawals when you win. Get your money fast. You have odds boosts and specials, and of course a range of betting options, futures, any kind of player props, there's anything you can imagine. So to claim that risk-free bet, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up with promo code WPRT so they know I sent you. FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code WPRT. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credits non-withdrawable, expire 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 800-889-9789.
We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, some news you broke yesterday while we were sitting there watching the Titans game in the first half. You broke the news that Derek Mason was out at Vanderbilt after 7 seasons as head coach at Vanderbilt. The Commodores are moving on. And obviously it was ugly for Vanderbilt over the weekend. They lost 41-0 to Missouri and, quite frankly, just never really approached scoring a touchdown or a field goal in that game, which we'll get to here in just a little bit. Do you think that that game was what sealed his fate, or do you think that Vanderbilt had this in the works for a little bit now, and now just the timing of it, they decided to do it yesterday?
I believe, first of all, that from the start of the season that – I wrote this – believing it, and I was incorrect. I mean, I wrote basically like Derek Mason go 0-10 this year, and it's not going to matter. It's COVID-19. It's just the reality. They're playing an SEC schedule, and so you shouldn't expect even an 0-10 season to cost a job. But I believe that last year absolutely had him under scrutiny, and it makes sense because, again, you could make a case for him to be fired last year at 3-9, bringing – the three stars they brought back and losing at home to UNLV, like getting blown at home by UNLV. There was reason in year six to be like, man, it's just not working out, you know? But I also understood Malcolm Turner's decision last year, basically saying like, look, you can change coaches, but you got to change deeper things than that to give the next one a chance. But I believe that it was not just the Missouri game. It was probably something that picked up steam for a few weeks because it just was going in a bad direction. And, yeah, you can definitely look at it and say, yeah, well, they also had less than 53 scholarship players 1 week. They've had COVID. They don't have – I mean, look, SEC schools have walk-ons they can get from student body. You don't have that at Vanderbilt. You know, it's a different situation. But it's 7 years, and at some point, I think it does make sense to – look at the situation and say, hey, it's time to move on. And so, look, the Missouri game was ugly, but I think the timing of it is about signing day, not about what that result was. And I'm not sure, like, if Vanderbilt would have beat Missouri, I think this still may have happened. This is a long-term, big-picture decision, and I think it makes sense. You know, I mean, look, I think the problems are still there unless Vanderbilt – can address those problems that go beyond coaching. But, and we had Adam Sparks on earlier, you can also say, well, you get a new coach in and different energy and a different program, then maybe you can help some of those things happen too. There's a little bit of both sides helping each other there.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Sam text in, says, did Arkansas cost Derek Mason his job by making him play Mizzou instead of playing Tennessee and having a chance to win this week? So did having to reshuffle the SEC schedule around and going from playing Tennessee to playing against Mizzou and then just getting thumped, did that cost Derek Mason his job? Like if he goes out and it's normal and they beat the Vols, does he keep his job?
Yeah. I mean, I understand the idea there. And of course, there's people saying Sarah Fuller, blah, 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 cost him his job. It's just – it's not reality. This is a much bigger decision than that. So I honestly – I think – and Sparks said earlier, you know, it could have been announced after Tennessee. I think it's possible that it may have been announced before the Tennessee game had they played it, and it was like a send-off kind of game. I don't know that for sure, but I think that's possible. This was a bigger decision than that, and again, there's been a lot of – I mean, anybody who's around Vanderbilt, we can ask our Max Herz, you know, Sparks, Mitch Light, a lot of people. I mean, there's been the increasing – and it's an informed, you know, inclination that this is getting closer on Derek Mason. You know, that basically the idea is like, look, it's just time to move on. 27-55, 10-46 in the SEC, year seven. So this isn't like, oh my God, that awful Missouri game, you're fired. This wasn't that.
This is a buildup.
Yeah. I mean, you're assessing someone's entire tenure.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. TD text in, says, we know Vanderbilt's going to be looking for a new coach, but where does Mason possibly go from here? As you evaluate the options for Derek Mason moving forward, where do you think he ends up in his next stop?
I think it's either, you know, probably NFL a position coach, which he has done before, or Power 5 defensive coordinator. I think he'll be a commodity of school among schools with openings at defensive coordinator right away. I don't think there's any question. He did a great job at Stanford. I mean, Stanford hasn't been the same defensively since he left. I know a lot of this is talent and all that, but he had really good defenses at Stanford. It helped get him. That's the main reason he got this job. And so I think that would be the better route for him. You know, get a good D coordinator job. And look, man, look, Derek Mason, I think everybody who's been around him around here likes Derek Mason. He's a good guy. He's a good human being. There's got to be, as disappointing as this is for him, he had a classy message, too, yesterday, by the way, but as disappointing as this is, he's got to also kind of be, like, relieved to not have to deal with some of this stuff. You can go somewhere, be a D coordinator. You don't have to deal with all the media crap and everything that you do as a head coach.
Buyout's not bad either.
You got a buyout. You got money coming back from that, and he made about – you know, $3.5 million as a salary, which is pretty good at Vanderbilt. And you can go somewhere and be a D coordinator, a place that has players, you know, that week to week can match up with the players on the other side. I mean, I'm going to say 10-46 SEC record, that's bad. But you can make a case that investment, resources, talent, those 10 wins are upsets, right?
Yeah.
Just, I mean, the fact that you got 10 wins in this league It's just so different for Vanderbilt, which, of course, leads into the difficulty of filling this job. But that's really fascinating because I also think people look at this job, the university, the degree, the city, the conference. Derek Mason sold that stuff all the time. And frankly, you go 6-6 here and you've had a good year. And the expectations are not the same as other places. I think they can get somebody really good if they can demonstrate that there are actual changes coming in terms of the investment in the program.
Well, and I know this, for a lot of Vanderbilt fans, there's kind of a new energy today. And look, I agree with everything you said. I think Derek Mason's a great guy. I think he's a good football coach. I'm not sure he's a great head coach, but I think he's a good football coach and he'll land on his feet. But the reality of the situation is there was a ton of apathy from the Vanderbilt fan base, even heading into the year. So many people were upset he didn't get fired last year after going 3-9. I've seen a lot on Twitter the last 24 hours of people I know are Vanderbilt supporters who I haven't heard a peep out of all year, all of a sudden a little bit more active talking about Vanderbilt and the direction of this football program. But I go back to what I said earlier in the show, Joe, and that is until the environment at Vanderbilt changes, I'm not sure, regardless of who the coach is that you bring in, what the win-loss total is going to look like. And you got to keep in mind also, I know they haven't won a game this year. You also don't have a non-conference schedule this year to deal with as well. So that's a part of this conversation. But again, until the environment at Vanderbilt changes and it's easier to put together a team that can compete from a recruiting standpoint, certainly a facility standpoint, and just an investment standpoint, I'm not sure how much the bottom line is going to change until those things change, which we've talked about for years at this point.
Yeah, no question. There is positive movement on the fundraising front, at least in terms of how it works. It doesn't work how it used to work over there, which was very obstructive to athletics fundraisers. That has changed. Now, you still have to, you know, show the results and get the money and use the money and all that. Look, any of these candidates coming in here, and I think there are some really good possibilities, should ask all those questions and need to really, like, nail it down, like, okay, what are we doing? But Daniel Diermeier, the new chancellor, he's been at Northwestern. He's been at Stanford. He has seen academics and athletics work together. You know, Candace Lee is still early in this job. And, you know, look, I have no question that she wants to change it. You know, it's a matter of can they demonstrate to these coaches that they're going to change it. Also, on the point of Mason, I would say, you know, I guess my big criticism would be, you know, there's in-game stuff and all that. He's a defensive coach.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. There's a lot of defensive coaches who work out well. But I think at Vanderbilt, I think the innovative offensive coach, the innovative offense, maybe a little bit different offense, is something that could really help Vanderbilt be more competitive in this league.
Yeah, and we've talked about for years maybe going a different route with the offense. Instead of trying to line up and either run a pro-style offense or try to line up and go spread against teams in the SEC who just flat-out have better athletes than you most of the time, maybe a different approach, like an option, maybe a triple option attack could work. I don't know, but I think it's certainly worth at least entertaining that idea if you're Vanderbilt.
Yeah, at least spread. Because, I mean, Derek Mason definitely believed in that, like that Stanford kind of offense,
right.
Pro-style power, you know, run it at you, play action. And they had some success with Kyle Shermer, and they had some good players, but I think it's just hard to sustain that in the league with the line of scrimmage talent on the other side of the ball that there is. I mean, Jamie Chadwell, I don't know if he's going to be a serious candidate here, but Coastal Carolina, that offense is like triple option with passing ability.
Yeah.
It is awesome. I think at least you need to spread it out and kind of, you know, minimize the talent difference that way. And they, of course, Todd Fitch came in this year to do that, so they've done that more this year. But I think offensive coach is something I would really be high on right now if I was Vanderbilt.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Heidi from Dixon text in, get excited, Robbie. Mason getting fired. We'll get Pruitt fired for sure if Vandy beats Tennessee now.
So now every time Heidi says something, I'm thinking in terms of Vrabel burner. Is that something Vrabel would say?
I don't know.
What would Vrabel say?
Does this
say?
Make things worse for Jeremy Pruitt? Like if they lose to a Mason-less Vanderbilt, is he for sure gone now?
I don't think
I still think they could lose.
I think they could lose. I don't think he's for sure gone with anything outside of like off the field stuff, but that wouldn't help him if he loses to Todd Fitch, you know?
about Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher coming in, interim coach, Tennessee game.
Just bring Jeff Fisher in for the Tennessee game?
Yeah. One, test run.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot of pub today, man. I even saw some Vanderbilt fans talking about him yesterday.
Yeah, like they want him?
Yeah. Like, what about getting Jeff Fisher in here?
I mean, hey, look.
I am all for it.
I have no doubt he's interested.
Somebody texted earlier.
I have my doubts Vanderbilt's interested.
On the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. They said, if Vanderbilt's looking for some exciting football, Jeff Fisher may not be the place to go.
That's true. Jeff Fisher, you would think, would kind of have the same view of offense as Derek Mason.
Probably not
does,
running
right?
the spread with Jeff Fisher. Would be my guess. Maybe he's evolved.
Who knows?
Maybe he's been spending some time in Montana diagramming a new offense.
I mean, it is. Look, you're in the NFL. Doesn't mean you're going to do the same things in college.
Yeah.
So you gotta have an open mind on that. I have my questions about whether Vanderbilt will give him any kind of look.
Yeah, me too. When we come back, and what turned out to be Derek Mason's final game as coach for the Commodores, a really, really cool story that garnered a ton of national attention on Saturday. We'll react to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning. Joe, really cool story over the weekend that was really the story in all of college football. Vanderbilt taking on Missouri. Sarah Fuller at kicker for Vanderbilt was the first woman to play in a Power 5 football game with the kickoff to begin the second half. Now, unfortunately, Vanderbilt did not give her a chance and put her in a position to attempt a field goal in this game. They get shut out in the game 41-0. And look, it was a classic case on Saturday of social media being like a pretty awful place to be in terms of idiots just being out there and making their opinions known. But I thought a really cool story. I thought Sarah Fuller handled everything very well, and a great story, a great moment for college football on Saturday. What were your thoughts watching Sarah Fuller play in that game and just everything that went around that story in college football?
I will tell you, I would not have bet a few days earlier that my wife and my 10-year-old daughter would be watching the Missouri-Vanderbilt football game with me, but they did.
Yeah.
It was very cool. It's a cool story, and this is where, like, I probably need to be better about ignoring doofuses, but there was some pretty loud. In fact, I used a word that I couldn't believe The Athletic let me write about these people.
You cannot use that here.
Yeah, I can't say it's bleep heads. Okay, bleep heads. I was impressed that they let that go through. Thank you, Athletic. But it's just like, here's the thing. I hope some Vanderbilt fans who thought this are reconsidering since Derek Mason got fired. But there was this whole like, this is Derek Mason grasping at straws to try to save his job with this, you know, trying to, you know, get a woman on the team, or oh, Candace Lee's forcing Derek Mason to do this. Look, this was a move out of necessity to get Sarah Fuller on the team. They didn't have anyone else who could do it. It's hard. Like, this is something you should be able to look at in football over all these years. A lot of soccer players become kickers because the goal kick from a goalie is the exact same mechanics.
Right.
It's not – I mean, anybody who's tried to go, like, kick an extra point or something, you'd be shocked at how awful you will be at it. Even if you – and most punters, by the way, because I've heard people say, well, the punter should have done it. Well, he couldn't do it as well as – look, she made a 38-yarder in practice. That's not great, but I guarantee you – very few people can make a 38-yard field goal. She also made.
By the way, it's not like Vanderbilt's kicking this year.
It's been awful.
You're reliable to make a 38-yard field goal anyway.
It's been awful. I 3-for-7 this year.
Yeah.
And she also made 15-of-17 at one point in practice. They looked around. Derek Mason knew of her. He's very close with Darren Ambrose, the women's soccer coach. They don't have a men's soccer team at Vanderbilt. It was a situation of necessity, and they brought her on, and she jumped at the opportunity, and she handled it like a champion. And of course there are going to be naysayers, but like, this was not a conspiracy, you know? And so it was frustrating to hear that. And then of course all the sexist, macho, toxic male crap that you're going to get if a woman touches the sacred ground of a football field. It's unfortunate she couldn't at least get a chance to kick an extra point, you know, because that probably would have been successful, and yeah, they just couldn't get to the end zone. The squib kick was by design. I mean, look, they got it at the 35-yard line. It would have been great to see her booting out of the end zone, but it's also kind of unrealistic to think someone's coming in and doing that. I thought she handled it great. She was awesome talking after the game, and I know she talked with reporters yesterday too. She handled it so great. And She's a champion. She's a Vanderbilt champion, goalkeeper for an SEC championship team that won the first SEC title since 1994. And in the midst of all this, I'm thinking to myself, you know, it's kind of sad that, like, I didn't write anything about it. We don't talk about it. You know, there's a lot of athletes doing things in other sports at these schools that get no attention. And so I think this brings some attention on that. I think it is a great moment for women in sports. It doesn't mean that football is going to be, you know, infiltrated by women. I think we could see more women who are kicking. And actually, there are more women, like, playing high school sports and things like that, high school football. In fact, Vanderbilt basketball. Darren Ambrose has a recruit coming who plays not kicker in football. So, you know, but it just, the reaction to this should be cool story. Great for her, and it was a historic moment. And, yeah, Vanderbilt jumped all over the publicity. The PR department jumped all over it. Of course they did. I mean, if you're them and your job is to find positive stories about Vanderbilt, it's hard in this football season.
It has been hard to find.
You're going to jump on it. But from the Mason perspective, the Candace Lee perspective, this was a desperate situation because of COVID, and you did the best you could to find someone. And by the way, they went out and reached out to Riley Gay, who was their kicker the last three seasons, who was a med student, and asked him to start going through the protocols. He may end up being the kicker when they play the Vols. So it's not like they're – you know, I mean, they were doing everything they could to try to find a kicker, and people want to make it this evil, you know, conspiracy thing, and it's just stupid.
I was bummed out, though, that she didn't get a chance to kick a field goal. Like, they crossed the 50 a couple of times, and then they either just the drive fell apart or they turned it over. And I was like, just give her a chance to kick a field goal. My wife was watching. She was ready for them to kick, but they just never could get it done.
Yeah, they were bad. You know,
and the offense had been playing so well like the last few weeks leading up to this game, and then they just laid a total egg in this game. That was surprising to me.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, they probably would have had to get to like the 15, I would think, around there for her to try one. But
what was her long, 38?
38, in practice, yeah. So, and, you know, yeah, it's too bad she didn't get more. And it's possible she could kick this week. I don't know the whole status of the other kickers and things like that, but it's possible against Georgia that she could be the kicker again this week. Another thing that she did, she talked at halftime, which I was blown away by when she said that after the game. Like, she's like, guys, let's have some energy on the sidelines, you know? And of course, I've heard people say, well, you got to earn that to, you know, to talk to a team. But you know what? If no one else is talking and she just came off a championship team, hey, someone say something, you know? I mean, it's a bad look for Vanderbilt that any newcomer would come in and address the team. But damn.
Some energy on the sideline.
Like, and what she talked about was like someone, I think, you know, made a play or something, and there was like no congratulating, no, I mean, and look, so that's a sign of a team that is just right now battered down by this season.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, and it, like you said, it's kind of disappointing because they actually have been pretty good on offense lately, at least. And I don't think Missouri is, you know, the Purple People Eaters over here. It was just a total meltdown.
It was, and turnovers. Just not being able to finish drives. I mean, it was bad. Kent Seals didn't even have 100 yards in the game, did he?
I don't believe
he did. It was barely. I mean, it was just a really rough showing. But a cool story nonetheless. And like literally, the eyes of the college football world were on Vanderbilt. So great job by Sarah Fuller. I don't know if she's going to get a chance to kick again, but even if she doesn't, you stepped in. She didn't have to do that. I mean, she could have gone home for Thanksgiving. They asked her to do it. She went in and filled a spot that they were in a really bad spot for. And it's unfortunate that there's negativity that surrounds this, but that's the way, that's the world we live in right now. It's just what it is. But I, for one, I tip my hat to Sarah Fuller.
Agree. And you know what? I need to do a better job of ignoring that stuff. And she did a great job. She's like, eh, yeah. And basically shrugged it off. Sometimes it's on a certain websites, it's hard to got to mute everybody.
The mute button, a powerful thing, Joe Rexrode.
It is. The mute button is a beautiful thing.
That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow to talk about the Titans. Look ahead to the big game against the Browns. Darren Donica Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5, The Game.